Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Good News Ministries of GNM.org. It's the Catholic place for faith builders. You'll find daily good news reflections on the Scriptures of Mass, written by Terry Modica, to help you in your everyday life and struggles. Visit GNM.org today. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Good morning, Ricardo.
Good morning, Philip.
Good to see you.
I hear you have questions for me.
I do. I've got a very big question for you.
Okay.
What does the Chancery Office do? So the second half of the year, the pastor at Sacred Heart in Racine, you also have another role, an assignment in the diocese as vice chancellor for the archdiocese. Mm-hmm. Tell me what the chancery is.
So you are a canon lawyer in information also. So you,
few more months and I'll be done.
A few more months and you will be done. So anything that the tribunal doesn't do, the chancery does. That's how I look at it. It's a variety of things. I think our task is to assist pastors and parish staffs to have some resource on what can be done and what cannot be done. I remember one parish once that asked, we have a funeral, we think it's large enough that we will not fit in the church, can we do it in the school gym? It's a one question as mm-hmm. as many. We also give all the permissions and dispensations for marriages.
Sure.
As you know, because I get paperwork from you. You are a good paperwork person. You
okay.
do well.
You can read my handwriting? Okay.
I can.
Okay,
but you can tell some priests are better than others at fulfilling things well, mm-hmm. Filling up the documents fine. That's what I think we do. We also have, for instance, I'm the editor of a newsletter that goes to secretaries, where my secret attempt is to make sure that secretaries can confront their pastors when they don't do the right thing. It's very funny. I have a secretary, very, very nice woman, who didn't know I was the editor of the secretary's newsletter. So she would tell me, she would come to a staff meeting with a list of things she had learned from the letter. And I used to smile because I knew what she meant, because I had written the letter a day before, right?
Yeah.
So that's part of what we do. A lot of issues with sacraments, questions about godparents, questions about baptisms, questions about weddings, and some processes that like the proxy process mm-hmm. goes through the chancery at some point. All these things, yeah. And every day is different. There are some days that you find that full of unexpected activity, and there are days that you can dedicate to more regular activities, like the publishing of this, the editing of this newsletter.
Right.
It's interesting. It's a way to help people, I think. That's how I understand canon law.
I appreciate the role of the chancery, of canon law, of what some might call bureaucracy in a negative sense, because it's a reminder that, you know, in our lives, discipleship is lived out in the details and really mm-hmm. the actual choices you make. And it's the same thing here. Kind of the work of discipleship, the work of the church is lived out in details as mm-hmm. well. We'd love to have just big dreams and just, you know, let that be our kind of the fuel we run on. But, you know, you got to get it done and get it executed. And the chancery office is such a really critical part of that.
The chancery office is also an example of a principle of law. We say that law follows life, not the other way around. So mm-hmm. things happen, and then we try to help people to help them to do it. You know, it's very real. Yeah.
There's a phrase that Dr. Barbara Ann Cusack, our chancellor, has used, and I might get it wrong. You need to correct me, but canon law is the body and the muscles upon which that hang on the skeleton of theology, I think.
I think she
I was
says,
hoping you were going to correct me.
No, I've heard the sentence, but I wouldn't be able to.
Well, the gist of it is
I think canon law is the skeleton, actually.
Okay.
And life is the muscles and the flesh, I
yeah,
would say.
Yeah, and the theology and canon law, they work together as part of the body.
Exactly.
That's the point,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. A disconnect within theology and canon law would be a problem.
Right.
But then canon law needs to find its place also. There are rules and regulations, there are ways to do things, but I don't think a canon lawyer is someone who is there to tell people not to do things. I think a canon lawyer is someone who finds the way to make sure that life can happen.
Right.
You know? And to find solutions for real problems. And we too often have this idea of, especially among priests, the canon lawyer tells you what not to do. A canon lawyer, a good canon lawyer would tell you, how to do correctly what you are thinking about doing. Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, so we
guess
should
what?
Go,
we yeah. should talk about the gospel.
Sure. What do we have this week?
We're in the 25th Sunday in Ordinary Time. Once again, this week, a long option and a short option. I'm going to read the longer option, mm-hmm. which is from where?
We are reading from Luke's Gospel, Cycle C. We're still reading from Luke, chapter 16, verses 1 to 13.
Jesus said to his disciples, "A rich man had a steward who was reported to him for squandering his property. He summoned him and said, 'What is this I hear about you? Prepare a full account of your stewardship, because you can no longer be my steward.' The steward said to himself, 'What shall I do, now that my master is taking the position of steward away from me? I am not strong enough to dig, and I am ashamed to beg. I know what I shall do, so that when I am removed from the stewardship, they may welcome me into their homes.' He called in his master's debtors one by one. To the first he said, 'How much do you owe my master?' He replied, 100 measures of olive oil.' He said to him, 'Here is your promissory note. Sit down and quickly write one for 50. Then to another the steward said, 'And you, how much do you owe?' He replied, 100 cores of wheat. The steward said to him, 'Here is your promissory note. Write one for 80. And the master commended that dishonest steward for acting prudently. For the children of this world are more prudent in dealing with their own generation than are the children of light. I tell you, make friends for yourselves with dishonest wealth, so that when it fails, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. The person who is trustworthy in very small matters is also trustworthy in great ones. And the person who is dishonest in very small matters is also dishonest in great ones. If therefore you are not trustworthy with dishonest wealth, who will trust you with true wealth? If you are not trustworthy with what belongs to another, who will give you what is yours? No servant can serve two masters. He will either hate one and love the other, or be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and mammon." It's a tricky gospel. You almost need to kind of write it out, map it out.
I begin many homilies telling them, so what you have here is a patch of several stories. And this is what's happening
patchwork,
here.
Patchwork, yeah.
Patchwork, because the gospel is a compilation of stuff and that is not put together the way that we would put together stories in our present time. So there is this story, and then there is a story of the steward, the administrator, mm-hmm. and then there are some different sayings that are not necessarily connected to the main story or the story we started the gospel with. I'm pretty sure about this. Sometimes what you need to do is to identify different parts of the text that do not necessarily connect. It's not the same. Now, the first story, there is a word in English that I am afraid to pronounce, but the administrator, the steward, is a shrewd, you say it? It doesn't say that. That's a word in English that I don't know how to
shrewd.
Pronounce.
Yes.
But this is what he does.
It's your word, you're saying.
You see, yeah. He's not spending any time in defending himself. He's not spending any time. He goes to what's important right away. He finds a way to make good of a bad situation. And I always admired this character.
What I see is in that first part, and really I see it actually in the whole gospel here, but a little bit of a connection to last week in that sometimes things aren't real pretty to see happen. Mm-hmm. So I think what he's doing here is taking an imperfect situation, taking a situation of a crisis and making the most of it and doing what he needs to do. And I appreciate what you said. He kind of gets right to the point and says, all right, this is what I'm going to do, and not involving any profit. So I'm going to write for less here for these notes that are owed, but I'm not going to be taking any profit. Mm-hmm.
Actually, those who like to apply historical method in interpreting the scripture, they would say that stewards would take a percentage of the debts to the master, so actually he is reducing his own benefit. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, to actually support what you say. Yeah.
Yeah. Mammon. You know, and Mammon, I looked it up kind of in Greek or in Hebrew, it means that in which one trusts. Mm-hmm. And that word here is, it's part of the last line here, and you cannot serve both God and Mammon. We usually associate Mammon with money. Mm-hmm. And I think that's right.
I think that's what it was.
That in which one trusts often comes out to be money. And just that very powerful last line to say, you can't serve both. You've got to make a choice.
And it's not only with money. There are many situations in which, what you've said many times, you have to make choices, and there is no way to live in two different realities. And the reality of discipleship is one that confronts you and makes you incompatible for many other things.
Right.
And I think that's what that saying means. For the children of this world are more prudent in dealing with their own generation. I always thought that this means that we have to be... So I remember one parishioner that came to a talk I gave at the cathedral, and I appreciated that someone would take the time to go from Racine to the cathedral only to listen to me. But it was about the Beatitudes. And at the end of the talk, she asked me, but Jesus wants us to be dumb? She didn't use that word. There is another word in English she used that was much better. This gospel is fantastic because it tells you, you need intelligence to be a disciple of Jesus. You need to be astute.
Astute.
And we, as priests, we know that. We have to be. We have to be good at so many different things, and we can. So we have to find ways to do it. And I believe that gospel compensates this idea that all these angelic Jesus and all these angelic personalities, we are not angels. We are human beings. And we are asked to use everything we got to what we do.
We can suffer in religion with associating it with magic. It's kind of the stereotype of superstition or magic.
Also.
But I think as religious people, we can kind of think that way, in that the things just kind of come together. I love the fact here that there are people here and Jesus speaking about an imperfect situation and saying, hey, this is what you do in this situation here. There's dishonest wealth, you know, do what you need to do.
You said something about bringing things together. That's exactly what the etymology of the word means. Religion means to retie, to rebring together.
Right. But as we live our lives as disciples, and especially in moral decisions, we sure would love, we love ourselves and we love for others that these were clean, easy decisions. Here's a black and a white. But the thing is, we're human beings, we're dealing with other human beings, and sometimes it requires getting to the point and making a tough decision that might be best at the moment. Maybe mm-hmm. it's not the ideal. And I think that's where sometimes we move along as we're trying to live out the truth long term. Mm-hmm. It's just, my whole point in saying this is last week's gospel and this one are reminders of just the messiness of life mm-hmm. and of discipleship. But we've got to keep focused on that true north in the midst of it all.
And the dream of the Pharisees, or what the Pharisees represent, is precisely that reality is not like this. No, have you heard people saying, this is black and white? Well, no. People are not... Things and people and situations are not as binary as we would like to. For instance, politics seems to be very binary, you say, in between two choices. And that's not, life is not like this. Life is in the gray. Life is not black or white. Life happens in the middle, yeah.
So one of my favorite lines from the Gospels is in this week's Gospel. The person who's trustworthy in very small matters is also trustworthy in great ones. And I just have always loved that line as a reminder of, once again, I keep going back to this, it's the details of life where we make choices to follow Jesus Christ, to follow God, to be a disciple. But I also think of this when it comes to those infractions. I see this to the kids who are going to receive reconciliation at second grade. It's a young age. I tell them flat out, you probably don't have mortal sins at this age. However, we want you to be trained in the practice of this. So when you have, you know, to continue to come to the sacrament, and when you have serious sins, to be comfortable here, but also to watch those small infractions. Mm-hmm. You know, who is a liar? It's someone who tells lies. Yeah. Someone's fallen down into these little traps, and all of a sudden you become numb to it. And that's, of course, very true for adults.
And these small infractions can become, I would tell the children, can become a gateway or a rabbit hole for bigger infractions. I think that's what Jesus is saying here.
Right. All right, good. Look for Mass this coming weekend, the Saturday night or Sunday, masstimes.org or archmill.org. So we'll get together next week then and chat more?
Mm-hmm.
All right, excellent. I'll
see you
there.
Hello, this is International Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.